Welcome to the True Crime Lab, a show from Jay and Rude Boy about true crime.
Join us as we cover topics like notable and unknown crimes, serial killers, cults, white-collar crimes, the occult, aliens, the Hamburglar, killer clowns from outer space, haters of Monty Python, the
Jay,
Irish.
Jay, dude.
With deep dives into stories, narratives, and thorough research, we hope you learn something new about even the most discussed cases.
We never make fun of the victim or the victim's families, but we sure as heck make fun of the criminals. Because, well, they deserve it. We'll be covering topics each week, so you'll always have something fresh to listen to.
We can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, and everywhere else you get your stories.
As we traverse this crime-laden world, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review to let us know what you think about our show.
So enter the True Crime Lab with true friends talking about true crime.
Warning, the following podcast may contain descriptions that some listeners may find distressing. Listener discretion is advised. Any views are all our own and do not in any way reflect the places where we work. Hello and welcome to Mad or Bad.
My name's Neil.
And I'm Rachel. And today we bring you the story of Michael Swango. He was a Dr. Death. So to put it plainly, he was a serial killer and an extremely narcissistic personality who used his access to patients and colleagues to satisfy his own sick obsession with death and dying, as well as wanting to be the hero in these dramatic situations. What's so surprising in this case is the length of time Swango was allowed to continue on his killing spree and how he was able to continue practice medicine both in the United States and in Zimbabwe, where he eventually fled to continue such an awful killing spree. It is said he has murdered up to 60 people, maybe even more. However, the actual number we may never know. We will begin in the only place where the story can truly begin, which is the very, very start.
Quite right, Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Joseph Michael Swango. So, he was born October the 21st, 1954, in Tacoma, Washington. He was raised in Quincy, Illinois. Quincy is known as Illinois' Gem City and is situated on the Mississippi. It's one of the state's most important cities and ports. And in autumn of 2010, Forbes magazine, no less, listed Quincy as the 8th best small city to raise a family.
Yeah, let's move there.
Yeah, let's get there.
Quincy, yeah.
Swango was the middle child of Muriel and John Swango. His father, being a career US Army officer who served in the Vietnam War. Swango's father was plagued after the war and struggled with alcoholism and depression. This led to the family separating and ultimately Swango's father not really being in the picture. Swango has said himself, his mum kept the family together and it seems he was quite close to her. His father was emotionally and physically distant to the family and mum seemed to overvalue her children in an attempt to make up for the lack of second parental figure.
So Swango was a high achiever in his early years. He became high school valedictorian in 1972.
What's a high school valedictorian?
I think it's the person with the highest grades.
Oh, okay.
And he went on to serve in the Marine Corps, only to be honourably discharged in 1976. Swango then began his career by studying medicine at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. Around this time was the first of many clues as to Swango's obsession with death and dying. Instead of spending his time at university studying, he preferred to work as an ambulance attendant. One of his colleagues noted that he had a scrapbook and was putting articles from newspapers regarding fatal car crashes, poisonings and other gruesome deaths kind of all together. Many of Swango's patients were said to go into cardiac arrest during this time, raising suspicions from colleagues.
It's just coincidental.
Oh yeah, it's all coincidence. Swango was nearly expelled from university as he was caught faking some of the rotations that he was supposed to do and working as an ambulance attendant instead.
So he wasn't doing his
He wasn't doing his OBGYN and instead he was working
As an ambulance attendant. So I suppose an ambulance attendant would be like an equivalent of a technician, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So he had a near miss and was allowed to graduate 1 year behind his other classmates. And he was very lucky.
He was, wasn't he?
It seems the fascination and obsession started here and was to continue for many, many, many years on.
Swango initially worked as a surgical intern at Ohio State University Medical Center and proceeded to complete his residency in neurosurgery at the same hospital. Some nurses began to become suspicious of Swango as it appeared death and dying followed his every path. I mean, you would do, wouldn't you?
Isn't this really like the case of Neil Torgal?
Yeah, was that not episode 2, was it?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Like the same thing, the same themes altogether. Yeah. But this dude takes it like a whole other
He's
level.
He's better than Niels, Niles.
Niels or Niles.
Thingamajig. Yeah, so colleagues become, you know, they started to become suspicious as it appeared, you know, death and dying followed his every path. However, their concerns at this time were not taken seriously. It seems Swango ran before he was caught. He began working as an emergency medical technician in Quincy in 84. On one such occasion, working as a EMT, so an emergency medical technician, Swango had responded to an emergency call in Rochester, Illinois.
Rochester?
I don't know. Apologies if it's...
Sorry, Daniel, he lives there.
Rochester, Illinois. The patient...
Not from Dan,
Rochester,
sorry.
Illinois!
Yeah!
The patient was gasping for air, was in acute pain, and essentially was experiencing a heart attack. Swango was instructed to administer emergency treatment and quickly rush the patient to hospital. Instead, he insisted the patient take his own car to the hospital with family. Swango offered no explanation and, you know, surprisingly was let go of that position. He was sacked. I mean,
so
we're laughing, aren't we? But
though.
Jesus Christ.
That is awful. I'm sorry.
It's just
You're
ridiculous.
Nearly dead, but you need to find your own way to hospital.
Yeah, get yourself in there, save money. Colleagues thought that he was weird, which kind of may come to that.
Do you see the picture of him that I'll post, actually? He's so weird looking. He's a creep.
I think.
So those big paedophile glasses that he wore as well.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Not
yeah.
a good look.
If Swango was ever criticised for his practice, he would drop to the floor and begin press-ups.
Seriously.
It's a bit of weird shit, isn't it?
Back from the Marine Corps days.
Just how he copes with, like,
he just couldn't cope with
criticism. I mean, that's in itself. I mean, very good for his upper body strength.
He would do this in the hospital, though.
So he got criticised, he would just start doing press-ups.
Literally, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Cray cray.
Swango opened up to one of his crewmates on one such occasion, revealing details about his fantasy life and fascination with violence. I don't know if he opened up to him whilst continuing to do press-ups at the same time.
I don't think it was the same time.
He stopped. His crewmate noticed that Swango frequently seemed extremely excited when they reached an accident, when he discovered particularly that there was a fatality, often exclaiming, "Wasn't that great?" Swango wanted to chat about all the goriest details. He even went as far as describing to a female colleague a sexual fantasy. This culminated in him plunging a hatchet into the back of her head.
Who tells someone that? Like, keep it to yourself, mate. You know, you
well,
might
if
be
getting
crazy,
those,
but, like, keep it to yourself.
I think I'd be going to see me flipping doctor if I started having these fantasies. He told his colleague, "The best way to come out of the emergency department is with a hard-on to tell some parents that their kid has just died from a head trauma."
How sick is that, though?
Well...
What a sick fuck.
Yeah, and the fact that he's telling... He thinks it's...
He doesn't even give a fuck, though. He's just telling everyone, like, clearly. His creepy fantasies about things. He can't keep it in, though, can he?
No.
Like, he's so consumed by it, he has to, He's so excited.
So Swango, as you probably gathered by now, was experiencing very sick fantasies and really wasn't even that bothered to expose, you know, these to other colleagues.
I think it was that, actually. He was so excited about it, though, and, like, so... What's the word? Like, stimulated by it, that it was just, like, it came out. He couldn't help himself.
No. It's kind of a sexual sort of...
There's a bit of a sexual element there as well, which is very strange. So soon, many of the paramedics that he worked with began noticing that wherever Swango prepared the coffee or brought any food in, that several of them usually became quite ill with no apparent cause.
Cool.
Specifically on September the 4th, Swango brought in a box of honey-made donuts to his colleagues at the ambulance quarters. About an hour later, one of the paramedics began to feel nauseated, flushed and dizzy, and had to rush to the bathroom to be sick. Within another 15 minutes, all four who had eaten the donuts had become quite seriously physically ill.
Them bloody honey-made donuts.
Fucking can't trust them, can you?
Mm.
The incident was reported to the Adams County Health Department for investigation, as they basically thought that they'd all been struck down by food poisoning. There were similar events over the next couple of weeks, crew falling ill from drinking soda, which Swango had brought them, and, you know, kind of different little bits and pieces like that, basically bringing in food and drink.
And he was never seen with a donut in his chops, probably.
Never. God, I'd love a donut, you know. Oh, my God.
I know, I think you had all the...
I did buy.
Rachel's got gestational diabetes.
But I had a day off, and I bought 5 donuts, and I actually ate them all in the space of about 48 hours. Don't
greedy.
But you know what? Some of them didn't even actually...
Odd.
Change my blood sugars that bad. So yeah. I was like, actually...
Come to Nippon and get you another 5 now?
Yes, please.
I'll get them in the morning.
In October of that year, Swango was arrested by the Quincy Police Department after arsenic and other poisons were found in his possession. So when police searched his apartment, they found a virtual poison lab with a book bearing a skull and crossbones. Really, like, old school.
Yeah.
Like, it's something like you'd see on a movie, isn't it? But there was also, like, needles, bottles, and there was handwritten recipes for different kind of poisons. The recipes were formulated with things like ricin, botulism, cyanide, and fluoroacetic acid.
Jesus.
Specifically, it is believed he had spiked a batch of coal tea. So on August the 23rd, 1985, Swango was convicted of aggravated battery for poisoning his co-workers. He was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment, however, only served 2 years due to his good behaviour.
He didn't poison anyone, so.
He only poisoned a few people.
Yeah, it's all right, isn't it?
Not that serious, is it? Just nearly killed them.
Lame out. So, 1991, Swango legally changed his name to Daniel J. Adams.
He sounds like an author.
And began applying for jobs as a physician, even though he had a felony on his records. I mean, is it that easy? Well,
he falsified loads of records.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, come on. In July 1992, he began working at Sanford USD Medical Center in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Swango forged several legal documents that he used to re-establish himself as a physician and respected member of society. He forged a fact sheet from the Illinois Department of Corrections that falsified his criminal record, stating that he'd been convicted of a misdemeanor for getting into a fist fight with a co-worker and received 6 months in prison, rather than the 5 years for felony poisoning that he served. So obviously, you know, big difference there. Swango was on his absolute best behaviour at this point, however quickly developed a reputation for being great in emergency situations. He always seemed to show up when patients were in cardiac arrest.
What gets me though is I get how he's falsified records, but like, do you know the way nurses have like a PIN number and doctors have like a GMC code, don't they? Yeah. I don't understand how you can get another one of those under a different name.
I mean,
unless he literally falsified like his actual like transcripts and
possibly.
Degrees and stuff.
I mean, obviously he's a I was going to say he's a clever chap. I mean, clever in terms of academic. He's no idiot, is he?
Yeah.
In terms of stuff, you know, doing stuff like that. I mean, this is only 92. I mean,
maybe the system was different, though.
No,
they
didn't
have computers and stuff like they do now.
No, I know, but I'm presuming that, you know, the equivalent of, you know, the American GMC.
Yeah.
Was.
American Medical Association, I think. Is that what it's called?
I
don't know. I could have made that up.
I don't know. So Swango then made a massive mistake. He attempted to rejoin the American Medical Association. So could well be the...
That could well be the GMC.
But surely he would have been on it anyway, on a register anyway to practice before. Anyway, we don't know.
No, he would have been stricken off that one when he went to jail. So now he's trying to reapply, isn't he?
Of course, yeah, sorry, yeah. Swango then made a massive mistake. He attempted to rejoin the American Medical Association. So obviously he's trying to rebuild everything here. He's trying to get everything... But he was found out and subsequently was fired from his job.
I think the checks for the AMA are a lot more robust than the other kind of things that he's done.
So somehow he managed to change his name again and was found in New York working on a psychiatric ward.
They were obviously desperate for staff.
It's like that in this country, isn't it? Jesus. Hang on, is he in prison now, this chap? Check him out.
Use him.
Yeah. Once again, suspicions arose as his patients started dying from unexplained reasons. It's all you need, isn't it? If you're on a shift with him. This is when things got really serious for Swango. The FBI began to investigate, and actually Swango did a good job of keeping a low profile until 94. It was then that the FBI caught up with him when he was found in Atlanta. Once Swango realised this, that, you know, the FBI was on him, he fled the USA and he went to Zimbabwe.
Cool. cray-cray, isn't it? They didn't have enough evidence at this point to really go forward with convicting him. But they kept losing him, which is really bad. So in November 1994, he went to Zimbabwe and used forged documents once again to obtain another job at a hospital in the centre of the country. Again, his patients began to die mysteriously. Swango failed to impress his colleagues. He seemed strangely inexperienced for a doctor who boasted considerable experience. You know, the fact that he'd graduated from medical school almost 10 years ago. And, you know, supposedly he was supposed to have all this experience since then.
He's in prison, wasn't he?
That might explain it. So as a result of these suspicions, the medical director, Dr. Izashiri, discovered that Swango had trouble with routine surgery and appeared to have never delivered a baby. So there was a lot of things that basically he boasted he could do that in reality, he had only very basic skills, really. Swango ascribed this to him being specialist in neurosurgery. Despite this, Swango did impress some of his colleagues as he was always eager to learn and keen to handle the trauma cases, of course he was.
That was his favourite, wasn't it?
And he always turned up at the right time kind of a thing for, you know, the more like serious cases or whatever.
Mm.
However, it wasn't long until colleagues began to suspect him once more. On the afternoon of June 26, 1995, a patient, Kitazo Shava, was recuperating in his hospital bed from having surgery on his leg when Swango attended to him. When the family entered the room, Shava cried out, quote, "The doctor had injected me with something and I think I'm going to die." Later that evening, Shava did actually in fact die, and the death certificate had been signed by Swango himself. So there was no record of any injection on his hospital records, and the family weren't really taken seriously when they made this complaint. Later the next day, another suspicious death occurred, and again, Swango was the one to sign the death certificate. Several other suspicious deaths occurred in the next couple of months. An inquiry was eventually launched. A search warrant was obtained from the police to search Swango's belongings, where they found an extensive array of drugs and medical equipment in his home. Swango was swiftly suspended from his work.
Mm. So during his suspension, Swango hired prominent lawyer David Coulthard to enable him to return to clinical practice. He also appealed to the authorities at Mapolo Hospital, Bulawayo, to allow him in the interim to continue working voluntarily. He was bloody keen, I'll give him that.
It's crazy, though, that actually that was allowed.
Well, yeah. However, this was opposed by one of the surgical residents who had often found him snooping around mysteriously in the wards and in the intensive care unit, even when he wasn't on call. As I say, very, very keen. He had suspected that sudden deaths of some patients were due to Swango, but he had no proof. At this time, Swango rented a room from a widowed lady in Bulawayo, who subsequently became violently sick after a meal he had prepared for her and a friend. The woman consulted a local surgeon who suspected arsenic poisoning and persuaded her to send her samples for forensic analysis to Pretoria, South Africa. These clippings confirmed toxic levels of arsenic in the hair. The lab reports were passed on by the Zimbabwe Republic Police Criminal Investigations Department through Interpol to the FBI, who subsequently visited Zimbabwe to interview Cotton and the pathologist.
What's Interpol?
It's like it's like an international police. So, like,
FBIs and stuff, and
yeah,
like basically,
well, yeah, like say a particular police, I don't know, so say Derbyshire police in England,
yeah,
and then, you know, police service in, I don't know, Germany, and
yeah,
so they all can
kind of
work together, yeah,
okay.
In the meantime, Swango had sensed that the net was closing in on him. He crossed the border to Zambia and subsequently to Namibia, where he found temporary medical work. He was charged in absentia with poisonings.
He's just mad for travelling, isn't he? But he's so desperate to get access to patients that he'll just keep travelling around.
Mm.
He could have taken non-medical work and probably never been found ever again.
Yeah, but it wouldn't give him
the
hit that he wanted.
Yeah. So on June 1997, an immigration official at O'Hara International Airport in Chicago took the American passport of a man arriving from Johannesburg via London who was en route to Portland, Oregon, and then eventually to Saudi Arabia.
Christ, all over the place.
I know, that's just a long flight. And guess whose name was on the passport? It was
it Michael Swango?
Michael Swango. So Swango must have been aware that a warrant had been issued at this point for his arrest. However, I think he just felt that there was no choice but to travel under his own name. He was probably running out of paperwork and was probably desperate to seek another patient-facing job to kind of feed his need for death and trauma.
He's crackers into this lad.
He is mad for it. So Swango was arrested and subsequently faced charges for 60 counts of murder that the FBI had been investigating. For the past couple of years, they had been building a case against him and were reasonably confident he had killed up to 60 patients. Swango pleaded guilty to defrauding the government in March 1998. In July 1998, he was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison.
The sentencing judge ordered that Swango, thank God, not be allowed to prepare or deliver food or have any involvement in preparing or distributing drugs.
Distributing
drugs. Swango was formally indicted on July 17th, 2000 and pleaded not guilty.
Initially, I think he pleaded not guilty.
On September the 6th, yeah, coming on there, Rachel, thank you.
Sorry.
He pleaded guilty to the 3 murder counts, as well as counts of wire fraud and mail fraud before Judge Jacob Mishler. Had he not done so, he faced the possibility of the death penalty in both countries. So that probably kind of thought, I think I'll probably plead guilty. At his sentencing hearing, Swango admitted to causing 3 murders, lying about his role in causing a 4th death and lying about his 1985 conviction. He is currently, as of January 2020, incarcerated in Colorado and is serving 3 consecutive life terms without parole. So he's never going to get out.
That's a good idea.
Best bet.
Yeah.
As part of his plea bargain, he was spared the death sentence. Michael's mum never knew of his fate and died in a nursing home in Missouri in 1999 at the age of 78.
Aww.
His other two brothers, Bob and John, agree that Michael is more than capable of murder.
So Swango had consistently refused to be examined by psychiatrists or psychologists. He has maintained his innocence, so insists that he should not be examined at all. So even though he, you know, technically said he was guilty, he that was kind of like a plea deal thing. He says that actually he never really did anything wrong. So, in many ways, Swango seems like a textbook example of a psychopath who exhibits extreme narcissistic tendencies. In other words, he lacks any capacity for empathy and can be aggressive, perverted, and extremely dangerous, as we've seen. Swango holds a strong sense of entitlement and a preoccupation with control and manipulation. He more than likely spent most of his time fantasizing about violence and disasters in which he emerges as a hero.
It's completely driven, wasn't he? Wasn't
completely
it,
you know? Driven. And it was, you know, it's the adrenaline rush of being the one to run in and save the day, isn't it?
Mm.
If we are looking through the lens of the Freudian view, I'd say a lot of people would say that Swango's actions may have been an attempt to make up for early feelings of inadequacy and not really being felt loved by his parents. We know now that Swango's father left the family home quite early, and maybe this was an attempt by him to, you know, make himself feel special and important. It's a common feature in psychopaths to have a parental figure who has been emotionless or detached. So it's very plausible to theorise this, really. However, this almost seems a bit too simplistic. And when you really look into his life and his childhood, you can see that actually mum was overvaluing all of her children.
She was
really
kind of trying to make
and
up for dad, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, he dad quite likely had PTSD. I mean, we don't know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it sounds like he had issues himself. Yeah. But mum, you know, overvalued Swango, attempting to make him feel more special and more superior.
Yeah.
And this may have
I guess it's fine line, isn't it, being a parent? You want to kind of...
And the difficult thing is, I think maybe he didn't learn how to evaluate his own self-worth in a realistic manner. So I think you'll agree this was a really interesting episode, definitely very similar to the Niels Hogel one that we've done. But I think the difference between the two is that we didn't have much information on his childhood, Niels Hogel.
So
this one you're able to...
At least theorize.
Yeah. and kind of, I guess, understand more of a context behind what he did, what he did. Although, obviously, it doesn't excuse any of that. He's a raging lunatic, let's face it.
Yeah, and I think for the safety of everyone, you know, he's never going to be able to...
Thankfully, he will never, ever, 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 ever...
Yeah, he's never going
to be out in the public.
I'm presuming they're keeping him away from the food and that, aren't they?
I fucking hope so. Imagine him in the canteen.
Mind you, although, if you go back to our episode, it was episode one, wasn't it? Billy Hughes, do you remember? Pottery Cottage. Jesus Christ, he was working in...
With the knives.
Bleeding knives, wasn't he? Anyway, yeah, that's another story.
But yeah, I mean, Jesus.
Good old Billy.
Imagine him... Billy? No,
oh,
not,
this fella.
Yeah, imagine him poisoning everyone. Yeah, I know.
Christ, they'd have to give him more life sentences, wouldn't they? He'd have about 10 life sentences.
So, yeah, that is the case.
So we hope you've enjoyed listening to it.
Yes,
and,
definitely. And we will see you again in another 2 weeks.
Thank you.
And you'll bye.
Thank you, then.
As always, catch us on facebook.com/madorbad. You can catch us on Twitter. Our handle is @madorbadthepod. And also, we now have a Patreon account. So please go look us up. It is patreon.com/madorbad. You can access exclusive content. We have exclusive episodes only available to Patreon supporters. So, yeah, go find us.